Blog Talk Radio.
Regional football team league, 8-on-8 league
at up in St. Petersburg today. The boys did a great job as a team. Ty had the final tackle, which saved the game. But they went from 72 yards in less than with the last minute and 7 seconds on the clock. So for the whole Manatee Pitbulls, we're dedicating this program to them and to Ty. Well,
congratulations to them.
Great job.
Absolutely.
Yeah, congratulations to them. Definitely.
Yeah, it was something to see. It really was. Wow, how's things up there?
Actually, we got some pretty good weather, huh, Zito? Uh-oh. No snow. I think Dr. Chris will be pleased with today and these last couple days, at least.
Yeah, well, Dr. Chris has been spoiled by Puerto Rico, so we'll see.
Yeah.
Dr. Chris has just been spoiled, period, by Dr. Chris. That's what it is.
Yeah, I just tried to call him, and his line was busy, so we'll get him on the line in a little bit because I know he'll want to talk about Daenerys' fight tonight. Ty, what's new with you?
Nothing, but yeah, Daenerys was fighting James Prado, and they were fighting, I believe, in the Philippines, or were they fighting in Macau? I could be wrong on either location, but I know Nietes also fought, but yeah, the Philippines, yeah. So it was Daenerys' return fight, you know, from his thrashing at the hands of Nicholas Walters. He was able to take out James Prado in the second round. Prado's a journeyman. Obviously, he's, you know, not an elite fighter. But for Nonito Donaire, it was probably pretty important for him not just to come back from a loss, but he hadn't looked good since he lost to Rigondeaux. He hadn't looked good in even any of the subsequent wins. So this is the best he's looked. He's back at 122. He felt that the guys at 126 were, you know, a little big for him. He said he would never rule out going back to 126, though he felt those guys were a little bigger. So he's back at 122. And, you know, he's looking for the Scott Quiggs and Peter Frampton's and Leo Santa Cruz's of the world. I don't think he's looking for Rigondeaux straight away just yet, but he's always talked about that's the rematch that he wanted.
Yeah, but Nonaire, that's a wise decision for him to stay down at that weight. Just because he's an explosive fighter, but when you get to translate in the weight differentials, he can't get people out of there like that at 126. He hits hard, but one thing you've seen, he had the right opponent, obviously, and that was also a good decision. Just because you don't want to put him in against a guy with power or even a hint of power at this moment. Donaire, as you said, subsequently after the Rigondeaux fight, he seemed to look nervous and look jittery and seemed to only want contact on his terms and not be comfortable with anything else. So I think you have to be moved down, and he's moving slow. That's a wise decision by him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially for a guy who had never been knocked down in his entire career, and to be knocked down twice and knocked out eventually, you know, is devastating to a fighter who was lacking in confidence, it appeared, since the Rigondeaux fight. So I think this was definitely a wise move, you know, just allowing him to get back on the horse, although it not necessarily be a stallion, but allowed him to get back on the horse and to try to ride again. And so obviously he's looking for bigger and better things. His name is still the biggest name in that weight range, so you know, he's always available for fights. It's just a matter of where his management takes him next and what they think is big and important for him.
Yeah, and people shouldn't get it twisted. Donaire, he has all the tools to be a great fighter. He is a great fighter. I mean, just now he's doing the right thing. Just because he moved up, I think he just did a little too much too fast, and it caught up with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other fight that had me kind of bewildered this week was a good friend of ours, Brian Minto, ended up on the short end of a card over in Greenland. Where was it? I thought it was Greenland. New Zealand. Sorry. And he lost to a young guy just with his first pro debut. He got a split decision.
Oh, wow.
In a Super 8 cruiserweight tournament. It just didn't make sense. But
yeah, how many rounds was it? Because a lot of times with those tournaments, like they do in Prize Fighter in the UK, those are four-round fights. So
yeah.
How many rounds was it?
It was four rounds, and after three rounds,
yeah.
One of the judges had it at Brian ahead by one. One of the judges had Sonnier by one, and the third judge had it even. So the guy got a split decision on that fourth round.
Now you know those events, they show up on your records. They're legitimate pro fights, but I don't think they necessarily speak to the quality of the fighter. That's why you have a lot of unknowns sometimes winning these tournaments. Arlie Harrison has won the prize fighter in the UK. Arlie Harrison, who just retired this year, just retired this past week, has won the prize fighter twice and accomplished nothing as a pro since getting gold medals at the 2000 Olympic Games. So I think that speaks a lot to the quality, not necessarily of the tournament, but when you fight four-round fights, it's not a true barometer of what a guy can do on a championship level, which is typically why you see guys who aren't on a championship level entering prize fighter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The other one that actually made me laugh was that Shannon Briggs. I got to look at Shannon Briggs. God,
oh,
it's
yeah,
like somebody put a pump up his ass and blew him up. He looked out of shape. He looked heavy, and he looked mean. And in fact, they took a point away from him in I think the first round for throwing the guy to the canvas.
What they actually took away from him wasn't just a point. They took a moot point away from him. You like that, the way I did that? A moot point.
Ooh.
Because Shannon took him out in the first round anyway, so it became a moot point taking away from him.
Yeah.
But the most interesting thing about that was after the fight, former cruiserweight champion and current steroid suspension victim, Guillermo Jones, approached Shannon Briggs, as opposed to Shannon, wherever you go, I go. Yeah, he approached Shannon Briggs and asked for a fight, and Shannon said, let's do it. But, again, Guillermo Jones is serving a suspension, so who's to know what happens there. But that appeared to be the most entertaining thing about that card.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, do you understand this a lawsuit between Golden Boy and Johnny Gonzalez?
Yeah, I read that.
He's fighting tonight, but
yeah,
that didn't make a whole. Yeah, I know it's all over contract. I understand, but do you have anything on that, Ty?
You know what? I came across that yesterday. It's very subtle how things happen. If we remember, a few years ago, really just a year and a half ago. Johnny Gonzalez was considered a dangerous yet very, very beatable opponent for one of Golden Boy's mainstay attractions in Abner Maris. So obviously Johnny Gonzalez at that time was more affiliated with Golden Boy. It's just things that subtly happen that you don't realize. Next thing you know, you see him, a couple years later after, a couple, defenses against some mediocre guys. His next, big fight is against Russell, Gary Russell, who last we seen was in a ring with a top-ranked guy, Vasily Lomachenko. And we know that Gary Russell is an Al Haymon guy. So all of a sudden, what's going on between Al Haymon, Schaefer, and Golden Boy and all those guys. So now we see Johnny Gonzalez in the ring with an Al Haymon guy. And I started thinking about this, just a few weeks ago, actually. I didn't even, do any research. It just came across my mind. I was just like, man, it's kind of curious that he's fighting, an Al Haymon guy. I think he's more affiliated with Golden Boy. And then, behold, a couple of days ago, I read in Ring Magazine that Golden Boy is suing him for breach of contract. I believe they're also saying that Al Haymon interfered in the process. So, we'll see what comes to that. But I expect this to happen with a lot of fighters that were at one time, affiliated with Golden Boy that are now with Haymon. We know that Haymon bought out Santa Cruz's contracts, but there are going to be a lot of other fighters. We know about the Keith Thurmans and, the bigger name fighters, but fighters like Johnny Gonzalez, who had an affiliation that, might not have been recognized to a certain extent because they weren't named fighters. So I think this is just the beginning. I think you'll see a couple other fighters be brought before litigation by Golden Boy as well.
Yeah, that seems to be a thing that, well, everybody wants to be with Heyman now because of all the contracts that he's got. I mean, Jesus, I don't think there's any kind of an outlet out there that he hasn't got a contract with, which keeps everybody else out of the picture, unless they want to deal with him.
We know Heyman has you know, obviously created all these multiple platforms, television platforms for his fighters. What people almost fail to realize is that it's his fighter tonight going on Showtime. So that's still a platform that he's still obviously affiliated with. We know Golden Boy is affiliated with Showtime. So that could get acrimonious in terms of dates and everything. So I'm curious to see if Steven Espinoza and the guys at Showtime plan to continue their affiliation with Heyman.
All right, Dr. Chris has just informed me that he is currently accepting calls, so I will go off the football line here and bring him right on.
Zito, speaking of Gary Russell, Johnny Gonzalez, how do you see that fight going tonight?
Well, it's an interesting style matchup, just because Gary Russell is fast. He very fast hands, quick feet. Doesn't use them educatedly all the time, and he's not relaxed generally. With Johnny Gonzalez, he's relaxed. He'll come to you, and he throws a mean hook, throws a mean left hook. If Gary Russell can elude certain punches, certain positions, which at times he's going to get caught, and I think his chin's going to get tested. I mean, he's made kind of for a counterpuncher to a certain extent.
And
now, Johnny Gonzalez caught up to Abner Maris, who I think technically in form is a bit better than Gary Russell. He caught up to Abner Maris early. So, I mean, we'll see about Gary Russell.
Yeah. You know, what Gary Russell has done throughout his career, and you know, specifically in his victories, he's just been too fast, too athletically gifted for everybody. At least on the level he was fighting. Obviously, he ran into Vasily Lomachenko. He ran into a superior boxer. Tonight, he runs into a very, you know, underrated boxer as well. Nacho Berenstain is training Johnny Gonzalez. So I thought it was really, you know, unique and accurate, Zito, that you said, you know, Johnny, you know, counterpunching, you know, Russell being available for counterpunches. And obviously, we know Berenstain is the trainer of Juan Manuel Marquez, who's a great counterpuncher. Johnny Gonzalez doesn't have that type of timing or counterpunch skill, but he has good timing and good counterpunch skill. He has tremendous power. And even though he's only about an inch taller than Russell, he's significantly rangier than Russell. So he's a longer fighter. And so what it comes down to is him timing essentially Russell's burst. Because Russell, what he's going to do is throw, you know, step in, throw a bunch of, you know, flashy punches and step out. That is how he plays defense typically with his legs. You know, he's not as slick as a lot of people might think. So, you know, Johnny Gonzalez is going to have opportunities to catch Gary Russell. Whether he'll be able to apply a pressure game and wear him down or what have you, I don't know. And the other thing, too, about Johnny Gonzalez is the one thing is he's not some granite, you know, chin fighter. He's been stopped three times in his career. Of course, it's been at the world-class level. You know, Jerry Penalosa, Ponce de Leon was a technical decision. He got shocked in three by Nishioka. So, I mean, he's been stopped a few times. But typically it's because he's not able – you know, you're able to hit him, and he's not able to hit you yet. He just hasn't been able to catch you, and he's been taking a lot of punishment. Gary Russell has that potential. He's not a hard hitter, but because of his speed, what he could do is allow the, you know, create punishment to pile up on Johnny Gonzalez if Johnny Gonzalez can't find the target. That's going to be the biggest thing. If Johnny Gonzalez finds the target, then we have something very interesting on our hands. If not, then I think Gary Russell is going to have to try to speed his way to a decision, which is, you know, what he's done through most of his fights.
Gentlemen, we're joined by the lovely and vivacious Dr. Chris.
Hey, Dr. Chris.
How you guys doing?
Hey, Dr. Chris, how you doing?
Pretty good. I'm here enjoying the freezing weather. The worst thing you can do is go away in January. Then that, when you come home, you freeze to death for 2 months. A terrible day up here. But what are you going to do?
That's right. I'm sorry.
What's going on this week? Is there any fights tonight?
Yeah, we have a doubleheader tonight on Showtime.
Who's fighting?
Canelo
fighting tonight?
No, tonight is Gary Russell Jr. against Johnny Gonzalez in the main event on Showtime. And the co-feature is Jermell Charlo against Vanus Medeiros.
Okay. When's Matisse fight Provotnikov?
Ooh, I'm not sure. I think that's towards the end of April, I believe.
It's coming up, isn't it?
How do you see that fight going, Dr. Chris?
What's that?
How do you see the Matisse Provotnikov fight going?
Well, I see everybody at ringside getting splattered with blood. That's number one. They better bring an umbrella. I haven't seen two tough guys this tough who want to kill each other fight in a long time. I think if you had to pick the two, there's no question Matisse has a slight edge in boxing ability, countering, moving around. But, you know, and the other guy is just, you know, never lets up. He's just constantly, going for the kill. There's going to be no dancing around, no counterpunching tonight. I mean, it's going to be, I mean, when the show goes on. That's a hard fight to pick. It's a hard fight. But as much as I like Provotnikov, I'd have to give the edge over 10 or 12 rounds to Matisse, you know? Because the other guy has a tendency to take time off and not
Agreed.
Press all the time. And when he knocked Algieri down, he let him off the hook. He could have put him away and won that fight, but he didn't do it. So sometimes he looks for the kill. He looks for the one shot, and then he lets the rounds go by and loses them, and that's how he lost that fight. So I got to go with Matisse.
You know what scares me about that? What scares me is that Matisse, he can do that. He has the physical capabilities to do that. But he's not the sort of fighter to drag a fight out 12 rounds. This fight's not going, I don't think it's going past six, to be honest. Somebody's going to go. Just because these guys, they have too much power, and they hit, and they get hit.
They're both easy to hit.
Yeah, and they have too much power. What I think is for Matisse to win, he would have to turn it into a boxing match. He would have to slow the pace down, move around, and essentially become something that mentally he's not. Matisse is usually the chaser. He has pretty good feet, but he doesn't move backwards. And I think that's going to be his main concern. He gets wild a bit, and he'll get caught on the inside a lot. I just think he needs to almost change his whole game plan up to win. Because out of the two, I think Provotnikov the tougher, the physically more rugged, tougher, more durable. But I think Matisse, he's capable of getting there first and more.
Yeah, you know what? This fight's going to – there's going to be some swelling and cuts around the eye, and somebody – that's what happened to Matisse the last fight. He couldn't see good, and he lost to the kid from Philly,
Garcia.
But it depends on who – you know what? It depends on who gets hurt around the eyes first and they can't see or something. Because this is really going to be a bloodbath in my book. I mean, these guys really don't know any other form of fighting. And when they get tugged, they really resort to the fighting. You know, they go all out, so –
You know what's funny? What's funny is all the sports outlets and all the boxing outlets are oversaturating the media with coverage of Pacquiao Mayweather. Every place you look, that's all you hear about when it comes to boxing. This is the second week in a row we, in some way, shape, or form, have broken down Matisse Provotnikov fight. I think which shows that this is a true hardcore boxing show, because the fight that most people in the true boxing and the hardcore boxing community are excited about is the Matisse Provotnikov fight. And again, you know, I always hold my prediction off until right before the fight. But as of right now, I stand exactly where I stood last week. I don't think Matisse wins that fight. I think Provitnikov wins. Matisse, to beat, like I said last week, to beat Provitnikov, you have to be able to move. Not just box, but to move. That has to be part of your boxing
mm-hmm.
game, to move. And I don't think Matisse mm-hmm. is a good enough mover. I don't think his feet are educated enough to allow him to beat Provitnikov. And like Zito said, I think of the two, Provitnikov is a hair a bit more durable. I think Matisse has probably more, to me, better one-punch power, but I think Provitnikov is the heavier puncher. I think he has those kind of punches that chip away at you more than even a Matisse to a certain extent, even though I think Matisse has that. But I just don't think Matisse has the feet to box the way he would to be able to beat up Provitnikov. Now, again, Matisse hits really hard. He could catch Provitnikov with something and keep him at bay just with his power. But, again, as of right now, that's what I see, happening. I lean towards Provitnikov.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I think it's so close. It's so close. It's hard to pick styles. I think it's going to come down to who gets the most severe injury first.
Yeah.
That's because, they're going to batter each other. And whoever gets his eye closed first or gets a cut, and has to change his game plan maybe, it's so difficult to pick that fight. But, I wouldn't bet my house on it. Let's put it that way. That's one of them things where
one guy, Provitnikov, he has no plan B. He cannot change his game plan. The other guy, Matisse, he has a little bit more tools in his arsenal, but he typically doesn't like to change his game plan. So that's going to be really interesting. So, you know what I mean? Because the one who kind of has to do something different is obviously the one who's not necessarily liking the way things are going. And and then once you push that person out of their comfort zone, how versatile and how good are they when they're fighting out of their comfort zone? That's going to be a very entertaining fight for however long it lasts.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing with Matisse, his last fight against John Molina, Matisse got knocked down twice. He got caught attacking. And to a certain extent, that's what happened to Tim Bradley when he got hurt against Provitnikov. Got caught up attacking. And I'm a little worried of how Matisse is going to, he has to keep range. He has to keep range. He has to be disciplined enough. And I've seen some incredible boxing by him, but I've seen him break boxers down. Against rugged guys, against a guy like that who you're going to have to not fall in, you're going to have to stay under your feet. I mean, I don't know if he's mentally capable. Physically, I think he could. But I just think mentally, he's just, his habits will take over.
You're right about the Pacquiao fight distracting from this one, because this fight has a chance to be the fight of the year, or the decade. You haven't seen two guys like this since Gatti and Ward fought, for the other, the tall featherweight, this has a chance to be a great fight.
The only thing that could ruin the fight is the anticipation, because of the two styles and with all that's involved, we expect this to be a hell of a fight. That's the only thing that could ruin it, that it doesn't live up to the expectations, because this fight has, all the expectations of being, like you said, a fight of the decade type of fight.
It also has the potential to be a quick one. Somebody could go quick. Even one.
Somebody could go quick.
You can't predict it. Really, it's really tough. I would rather see that fight than Pacquiao Mayweather. If I had a choice of watching the two, I'd watch that one.
I would too.
Yeah.
I would rather pay money to see that one.
Yeah, we're going to get that one for free someplace. Now, how about that? We'll get that one for free on HBO or someplace or Showtime.
Yeah.
Or PBC.
Yeah, I had a laugh. Max Kellerman called an animal. He said, this guy, he eats raw meat. He's an animal. and he is. He comes out of Siberia. Well, it's a tough area to live in, man. They showed you his little village where he eats, where he, you know, you can't grow anything. You have to go out and hunt every day, shoot something to eat and survive. Ah, what a tough existence.
You know what I think would also may influence my view, too, of the two guys, Dr. Chris. Obviously, Matisse has fought the better competition. But when I look at the two guys, they both have three losses. But in their six losses combined, I think only one of them has been beaten once. And I think the cut and the eye played a factor, a huge factor. I think the fight might have been significantly different if Matisse didn't have the cut in the eye. But he was beaten by Danny Garcia. I've seen Provitnikov lose a boxing match, but I've never seen him beaten per se. You know what I mean? I thought Tim Bradley won the fight, but Tim Bradley didn't beat him. He won the boxing match. He got the decision. He earned the decision. But I've never seen this guy beaten. It always seems like at the end of the fight, even with Mauricio Herrera, Chris Algieri, Tim Bradley, all three of those guys were happy the fight was over. You know what I mean? You know, they were escaping, surviving with the decision. The only and you know what? Against Matisse, Devin Alexander and Zab Judah were the same way. They were happy the fight's over. They escaped, survived with the decision against Matisse. Danny Garcia didn't do that, though. He beat Matisse. And so maybe that, you know, stands in my mind a little bit. And, you know, maybe obviously if Danny Garcia fought Provitnikov, he'd very easily doing the same thing. But I just see a little bit more give in one than I do the other. Although I think the other is, you know, I think Provitnikov has a little less give, but I think he's completely, you know, one-dimensional. I don't think he has many tools at all. I just don't think he has any give, though.
The thing about Provitnikov, the man's not going to beat him. It's a style. The style beats Provitnikov. The man is always going to come out more damaged than Provitnikov when he fights him. It's as simple as that. You're going to have, as you said, you're going to have to survive him. You don't go in there and win, I mean, convincingly. You might earn a convincing decision, but, I mean, after the fight, the fighter doesn't feel very convinced.
For the Danny Garcia fight, to me, in all those guys' losses, they lost the decision, but they beat the other guy up. They just, you know, lost the decision. You know what I mean? And again, I think, you know, the Garcia fight was the only time that Matisse was kind of beat up as opposed to beaten. It was the only time he was really beat, you know, so to speak. I've never seen Matisse beat up. You know, he's been roughed up, but he's always beaten his man up more. Bradley was having concussion syndromes for like 2 months after the fight. You know what I mean? He was still, you know, blacking out and stuff. I mean, he got beat up, and he cleanly won the fight to me. But, you know, that's what – I don't know if, you know, part of him winning that fight was, you know, he had to know when to use his legs, and then Bradley hold him all year. Bradley can stall the fight when he has to. Matisse's not a stall-the-fight kind of guy. You know, he's a kind of, you know, methodical, take-it-to-you kind of guy. And typically guys that are methodical, well, if they have to move backwards and laterally, they do that methodically too. And this is not the guy you want to move methodically against in Provitnikov. So it's a very interesting fight. Like you said, it could be a one-round knockout either way, or it could be a 12-round war. You just don't know what you're going to get because both guys hit so hard.
And they're both mean and rough.
I don't see 12 rounds. I just don't see. I do not see 12 rounds in this fight. I just don't see it. They hit too hard and they're too easy to hit.
We'll see what I want to see what the Las Vegas bookies put on this.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, I should have looked it. I should have looked that up. I'm really curious about that.
I don't know how they're going to make a decision.
I'm a firm believer that Matisse, because of the higher quality of opposition and the fact that you know, what's fresh in the last time Provitnikov was on U.S. TV, he lost to Algieri. And Provitnikov, you know, was in the fight of the year. He's just coming off destroying somebody recently. I think he's going to go in as a slight favorite. He's going to go in as a favorite, I believe.
Yeah, I think Algieri surprised Provitnikov. He surprised him. He thought he had an early knockout coming, and he kind of was waiting for the big one shot. Next thing you know, he's behind in points. And And Algeria was in tremendous condition at that fight. You know?
Yes.
But when did Pacquiao? Pacquiao took him apart. You know?
Walked through. Pacquiao just what he did.
Yeah, and knocked him down several times. I mean, you know, I didn't give Algeria more than one round that fight. I mean, he got the hell beat out of him. Totally frustrated. That's probably the most impressive fight Pacquiao's had in 3 years. You know, beating Algeria like that.
Yeah,
so,
but
you know,
looking at those two fights, though, it shows you Provodnikov's limitations. The reason why Pacquiao was able to do that to Algeria is because he's so multifaceted. The difference is Provodnikov and his weakness is he can only punch when he sets himself and gets in perfect punching position. And so, therefore, Algeria's movement, like, killed him. It completely befuddled him. Herrera did the same thing with the jab. Once you slow down or he gets you, corners the ring off on you, he's a beast. But what happens is guys can dance around him, and he doesn't continue to let his hands go. He's one of those guys that if he doesn't see his shots, he even though he's pressuring you with his body and his feet, he won't let his hands go unless he feels he's in that perfect punching position, whereas Pacquiao was constantly creating openings. Provodnikov doesn't create openings. He just attacks when he thinks settings are right, and that's why movement gives him so much trouble. There's no way I remember watching that fight being like, Jesus, why don't you punch? Like, because Algeria couldn't – it's not – he didn't respect Algeria's power. He dropped his hands and let Algeria hit him. It was the movement. When Algeria moved, he couldn't set himself. He just has to really be set to punch, and I think that's a tremendous weakness. I just don't know if Matisse could take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's – you know, we'll see what happens when the bell rings. That's all. It's the only way you can tell.
Yes,
that's a fight where they call it a pick, even pick, I think.
A pick and fight, I agree.
You know, when's the Russian fight again?
That is April.
Light heavy.
You're talking about Kovalev he's down for a few months now, obviously.
Ooh.
But the WBC Dr. Chris has mandated
times.
The fight between he and Stevenson now. It's mandated by the WBC that after their two respective defenses, they must the WBC has stated that Kovalev is the number one contender for Adonis Stevenson's belt. And so after their two respective defenses, Adonis must, if he still has that belt, defend it against Sergey Kovalev, or else he will be stripped.
Yeah, Kovalev has a lot of – he needs a lot of improvement in his defense.
Yeah.
He just comes in with that low jab to the body, and he drops it. And he never brings it back. That's basic 1-2-3 of – any amateur in the Philadelphia area, when you jab, you bring it back alongside your chin, and you kind of half try to protect yourself with your shoulder, too. But he just jabs out there and leaves it hanging. Somebody that's got the guts to stay in there with him and wait for the counter right hand is going to nail it. And is Adonis Stevenson left-handed or right-handed? He's left-handed.
Southpaw.
Yeah, he's southpaw. Yeah, he makes that mistake against him. He could go right over the top of that jab and hit him right in the face.
And if
Adonis, you know, being left-handed.
Right, yeah. Adonis could put him to sleep. So,
he throws a lead. He throws a mean lead right. His lead left. My fault.
Uh-huh.
He throws a mean lead. He's not much. Adonis isn't much. Doesn't have much of a right hand.
No.
You know. That's why I thought the Pascal fight was so important to Kovalev, because I knew Pascal, because of his durability and his heart, would stand in there and look to try to take advantage of Kovalev's flaws. Now, Kovalev made some adjustments during that fight, you know, after rounds 5 and 6 where he was getting tagged. He made a couple of adjustments. So what will be interesting is to see how much Kovalev grows as a fighter. And those defensive flaws, Dr. Chris, that we see, you know, maybe next time we see him in the ring, he shores them up a little bit. Because he finally had a guy who was, you know, young, fast, and tough enough to stand in front of him and make him pay.
And Pascal hit him a few times. Hit him pretty good. So,
you know, he proved to me he has a solid chin. He proved he has a solid chin. Because I still
question how
solid his chin was.
Loaded up, hit him. I mean, Pascal's not known for one-punch knockout,
But I mean, he almost ran into his face.
Yeah, and but you know what? If he didn't have a solid chin, one of those punches would have him. And,
yeah, it would have buckled
him. Yeah.
He never buckled from
any of
those shots.
He couldn't move in. It hurts twice as bad when you're moving in.
That's what we were saying. That's how we knew he had a good chin, Dr. Chris, because he was running into the punches.
He was running in with his hands down. As you said, he brought that back up.
Yeah. Well, we got a lot of good fights on the horizon. You know, they're saying the fight game this, the fight game. I think it's got a lot of a great potential now. I got every arena in the country. Guys are getting paid. Mediocre fighters are getting paid big money.
Oh, wow.
I'm surprised. But I saw a fight the other night from one of the casinos in Mississippi. It was an awful fight. They were fighting. They were the main event, 10-round fights. I mean, they don't have any fighters that, you know, everybody wants to put a show on. There aren't that many fighters to go around anymore. You're going to see them coming in from all over the world here, you know, soon. Oh, it's happening already. My wife's turning the TV on. I got to go in the other room. So.
Okay. Well, let me ask you guys, on the 11th, we have NBC is going to put another Al Haymon program on. It's going to be Peter Chocolate. Kid Chocolate Quillen is the card, but the undercard is Danny Garcia and Lamont Peterson. What's your thoughts on those two fights?
Ooh, I think that's another entertaining fight. I've been actually looking forward to those two matching up for a long time. I didn't think they ever would, but Danny Garcia and Lamont Peterson, their skill level matches up excellent. They both could do many things in the ring. And you like to see fights like that. People may think that at moments it's going to be exciting because both guys are warriors. But, I mean, these guys, they'll pick their spots at times. But that's going to be a heck of a fight.
You know what? Honestly, the Lamont Peterson-Danny Garcia fight is my sleeper pick. Everybody's talking Provitnikov-Batiste. It's my sleeper pick for fight of the year. The reason being is because when Lamont Peterson warms up, he brings the fight. And because Danny Garcia, because of his just the way he fights, he kind of can't help but get into a good fight. Like, Danny Garcia is always in a good fight. Even guys, unless he's fighting Rod Cypress of the world, but typically he's always in a war because he's so hittable. And he does everything well but nothing great. Peterson is the same way, does everything well, nothing great. Obviously, Danny Garcia is a little bit more talented of the two guys. He carries a little bit more power. He might be a little bit quicker. I think Peterson might be a little better technically. Garcia's proven to be a little bit more durable. But, Peterson has lost. He's lost at the highest level. He's lost to, Victor Ortiz, who at that time was, a raging freight train before Madonna. He's lost to Tim Bradley, and he's lost to Matisse. All except Matisse, he didn't give a good account of himself. And even going into the Matisse fight, the general speculation was, we're going to see what Matisse is made of if Lamont Peterson's there after three, because Lamont, you can catch cold. That is his weakness. Generally, when he gets knocked down, it's early in fights. Once he warms up, he starts bringing a fight to you. He's no longer the technician that people think he is. Lamont has become kind of like a methodical pressure fighter in a sense. And that's what he did to Amir Khan all night long. And so with Danny Garcia's style, I think Lamont Peterson has the ability to touch him from the outside and to touch him from the inside. These guys are essentially very evenly matched in all assets of the fight game. And I personally think that this could be the sleeper for fight of the year.
I'll tell you what, Lamont Peterson, once he gets warmed up, then he's an A-plus fighter. Danny Garcia, he's going to give him an opportunity to warm up because Danny Garcia is not going to blow you out of there. He doesn't look to do that. He looks to set everything up. One thing is, Danny Garcia, he fights best when his back's against the wall.
Yeah.
When things go bad for Danny, he seems to fight a lot better. It seems he needs to be pressed into his best fighting game. And Lamont Peterson is going to do that.
Yeah.
He's going to do just that. Both guys are going to take punishment. Just because Lamont Peterson He's good at getting on the inside. He's good at making it a war. Danny Garcia is a pretty good counterpuncher at times, and he's good at warring too. I mean, they both will be in the pocket. They both will throw hard to the body. Lamont, he's going to be a little technically better, but I do think that Danny's a better outside boxer.
Yep.
So I think it's all going to be where the geography is with this. If Danny could kind of keep it on the outside a little bit more, then he'll be, I think, generally more successful. Lamont can get on the inside at will, then I think he'll be more successful. They both fought Amir Khan.
Yeah.
And we saw more of Lamont against Amir Khan. We saw Danny with his back against the wall, what he did, and he went ahead and finished the job. Lamont, he applied more of a game plan, and because Amir Khan's not going to go blow him out of there. What I think is one thing, though, it would have been interesting at the time that Victor Ortiz was, you know, more well thought of when if he would have fought somebody like Danny Garcia, how Danny Garcia would have handled that. Just because Victor Ortiz, he puts darn near everybody down he fights.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing that he's known for. He's known for that speed and power, and he'll pop you early to where – I mean, Peterson survived it, but what would Garcia do? I mean, could Garcia survive it and maybe count, do what he did with Amir Khan? I mean, that's skill wise, these guys. I mean, I am really looking forward to this fight.
And you know, the other thing too is, you know, they're both very gritty fighters, and to me, that's also what makes a good fight. Yeah, man, they're gritty fighters, and so they're world class skilled, but they have a lot of grit and they fight with grit. You know what I mean? They typically don't. Neither one of these guys typically beats people just with their skill alone. They usually have to find a way to outgrit a guy, and I think that's what makes this fight so interesting.
They'll dig in. They will dig in. Might have to be careful with Danny's power early, not to get caught cold. Danny, he get aggressive and go seek that, but I mean, he doesn't want to lose energy for later rounds. Lamont has energy. Lamont will go to the body where are you down. Lamont, he's wiry, but he's extremely physical. And he fights extremely physical. He has a very good defense. He has a high guard generally, and he'll move his head with it. He'll lean at the waist, and he'll go low, as I say, he'll go low, bring his hands down, and he has a long jab to get him inside. So he has the potential to. I think he might have to reach advantage over Garcia, if I'm correct.
Oh yeah, I think so. Both of the guys. Well, the fight's at a catch weight of 143. So no matter what happens in the ring, neither guy loses their title. We could debate that all night if you wanted to. But both guys have always been big for the the bigger guys of the division. So.
How about Irish Andy Lee and Kid Chocolate?
Butch, I would believe you would be torn, Butch.
I am.
I know you do.
And Chocolate is, I did talk to his guys again, and I tried to get him this week. In fact, I tried to get Robert Guerrero. Robert Guerrero asked me to give him two more weeks.
The Goose. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, his ribs are so sore.
And when I was talking to Gooch, which is Peter's handler, he asked us to wait till after because we just can't seem to hit the time right because they're in California.
Oh, so, yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to wait till after the fight, and then he's going to come on after the fight.
Maybe. We'll see.
Yeah.
A lot's going to probably depend on how the fight goes, I would imagine.
Yeah.
That's going to be a good fight. That's going to be a good – it's going to depend – I think Andy Lee, how he boxes. His boxing is going to have to tell a difference because one thing I think is that Peter delivers a better shot and Peter takes a better shot.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I mean, we have to see how Andy Lee how he boxes.
Andy Lee lives and trains in New York, and the fight is at the Barclays Center. I would say that gives him an upper hand as far as the crowd's concerned because they love people up.
Kid, your uncle's from Brooklyn, though, baby.
Yeah, that's true.
Irish contingent there, but Kid Chocolate is from Brooklyn.
Yep. And the Barclays Center is in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We're going to see who the who draws the biggest crowd. But I think that you know, Andy's got two more fights than Peter, and he's got two more knockouts. So it's but
you know, Andy,
he also
has two
more
fights. In two of Andy's last three fights, he's had come from behind knockouts against, you know, Korobov, who was a little closer even, but you know, he was, you know, down on the cards and came back and knocked him out, and you know, he did the same thing in the fight before that. So Andy Lee's proven to be dangerous, you know, throughout the course of a fight. So that's a very interesting fight there.
What do you think, Chris?
Well, you know what? I don't know. I haven't seen Lee fight that much. I really don't have an opinion on that one. I haven't seen either one of them enough to develop an opinion. You know, I don't know. I must have missed their fight, but we'll see that night of the fight. I mean, you guys just gave a good description of him, but I haven't seen him. I might have been one guy I missed. I don't catch them all. I try to catch them all, but sometimes I'm, you know, not able to, and then they don't rerun them like they used to.
Yeah,
they're rerunning three and 4 year old fights now. I saw some 3 and 4 year old fights on Showtime and Showbox. You know, I wonder why they're even running them. They weren't good when they were 3 years old. You know, 3 years ago they weren't a good fight. They rerunning bums. You know, so I don't know. And the good fights you don't see. I don't know. Those guys, you know what I wanted to ask you guys, maybe you know. You know how actors get money every time one of their shows come on and they've got a piece of the action. Do these fighters in their contracts get any extra money out of these shows that go on forever?
No. Typically fighters. With the fighters, you'll get the bigger guys, like a Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao. They'll get a portion of not only the gate, obviously they get their general base salary, contract salary. They'll get a portion of the gate, and they also get a portion of the pay-per-view revenues. But to my knowledge, no boxer is getting residual in theater and in film. That's called residual pay. And as far as I know, no boxer is getting residual pay.
I often wonder why their managers don't go for that, because you know, they put on an hour show here, an hour show there. That's a lot of money involved. You know, how many times have you seen the great fights rerun, and there's no residuals on them? I don't. At least maybe the managers weren't smart enough
I know the broadcast.
You know, I don't think Bob Arum believes in giving anybody a nickel.
Well, and the broadcast rights are owned by the network, so. They would have to, like, that even, you know, is beyond the promoter. The broadcast rights is owned by the network. So they would have to actually, you know, negotiate with the network. Like, if you wanted to get footage of a boxing match, you'd have to go to typically that specific network that owns the footage. Like, if you want, you know, an old Lennox Lewis fight, you'd have to go to HBO. If you wouldn't own the rights, they would.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's part of the initial contract. You know, there's nothing worse than a boxing contract. Some of the worst things I've ever seen legally were boxing contracts. And because it seemed like one guy was always smarter than the fighter or his manager, and they always took advantage. I'd like to see the fighters, you know, get once in a while win one, you know, outside of the ring. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they put a great show on, they ought to get residuals for these if they're going to rerun it over and over and over again. I mean, but boy, there's no tougher guy to deal with in all the sports than Bob Arum. He gives away snowballs in Alaska, you know? He's tough.
Wow.
He's tough, man. You know, and they're all getting that way. Lou Duva was a tough negotiator. All those guys are tough. And now Golden Boy is so damn strong, I'm wondering, if, you know, them being two ex-fighters, if they're going to treat the fighters a little better and give them a little incentive to put a show on, a better show on, you know? I know there was a couple of fights programs where if it was voted fight of the night, you got an extra $10,000. You remember them doing that for a while? It was a call-in? You, you, you called in, and you, if the most calls, whoever got the most calls got an extra $10,000. You know, which was okay.
Oh, yeah. For, like, the fight of the night.
I forgot all about that.
Yeah, for, like, fight of the night or performance of the night. I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
That way maybe they wouldn't put people to sleep. What the hell fight was on not too long ago? It was so bad. Oh, my God. It put the world to sleep. What the hell fight was it? I can see it now. But anyway, it was an awful fight. It went the full distance, and it was terrible. It was just a terrible fight. And I turned it off finally. I can't watch this anymore. And then, you know, then another guy comes out, and he's trying to do his best and make a fight. And then, you know, an extra 10 or 15,000 goes a long way. I would like to see that come back. And on the bigger fights, give him, well, you know, Mayweather fight for $200 million, $150 million. What the hell is 10,000 going to do? What going on? Won't buy his entourage lunch the next day.
It's not going to change his performance.
But I watched this stuff.
I would like to see them put some money into a fund for the guys who went before them and are now living destitute because of their illnesses and things that come up from the
the retirement boxers fund, for instance.
Right.
Something that actually exists that they don't put money into.
When Davey Tiberi lost the middleweight title, when they cut the gloves in Jersey. Remember when he fought the guy that turned heavyweight? Well,
Dave Stoney,
he was promised that by the senator in
Bill Ross,
Delaware, if it gets this if it gets this far, we'll make you the head of that retirement fund and all that, where every fight gets so much put into a pension fund, and then they said, like, if you get 15 fights, you get so much. If you have 20 fights, you get so much. You know. But I don't think we'll see it, because politics would have to get involved, because, like I say, these guys are tough negotiators. There's nobody tougher than the boxing promoters, and I don't think you're going to see any act of kindness out of there and to throw a certain amount of money into a retirement fund. Would be a great idea.
Sure.
Would be a great idea. I think it change the image of the sport a little bit, you know.
I think when we have Kid Chocolate on here, I think we should maybe even, you know, talk to him about Al Haymon, because Al Haymon's a guy who gets criticized in the media until recently for matchups he makes with his fighters, and a lot of people claim that he, you know, would pull his fighters away from dangerous fights. Obviously, he had a grand scheme, but to a fighter, spoken nothing but highly of Al Haymon as far as, you know, Al Haymon taking care of them. So it'd be curious to hear what, you know, Peter Quillin has to say about that. You know, a guy who's been in the fight game for, you know, quite some time, and who's managed by Al Haymon. And again, I've heard nothing, including, you know, Kid Chocolate, interviews I've read with him, nothing but positive things about Al Haymon. So I wonder if Al Haymon is doing something to secure a fighter's, you know, future. So that'd be pretty interesting to find out. And maybe that's why so many guys are signing with him. So he's just real curious to see what his magic touch consists of. It could consist of taking care of a fighter's future.
Yeah.
When you deal with any activity that brings trauma to the head repetitively, then you should think about having a program that expands for a lifetime, like maybe lifetime health care from the time that you turn professional for the rest of your life, a lifetime psychiatric care. Because one thing is, you know, once it gets to, you know, brain and traumatic things, you never know how things are going to turn. And that gets dangerous not only for the person but for society. So just out of a sense standpoint, just to make things safer, you know, you should think about, you know, just people should think about that.
You know what? Millions was made off of Gerald McClellan, but Gerald McClellan, because of his injury, never had a chance to make millions. And so now, you know, he has to have all these benefits just to afford his health care. And you're right. And, I mean, not only is this, fighters have a very short window
to maximize, you know, what they their earning potential. And not only that, but it's just the upper 1% that really makes any significant money. And so with that said, even though they have a short window, you never that window could only be one fight, you know, if you take the wrong punch. Gerald McClellan was on a precipice of literally being a mainstream star. And you know, he went over to England, fought Nigel Benn, and got injured in that fight. And you know, he's been a, you know, a vegetable ever since. And there was nothing in place to look out for a fighter's welfare back then. And even with these type of tragedies, that the Dooku Kim thing with Ray Mancini, here we are 20, 30 years later, and there's still nothing in place to protect these fighters. And if not protect them, to even just look out for their welfare long term.
Mm-hmm. Well, fighters have a high suicide rate, and you know,
it's getting that way with NFL players too.
Trauma to the brain. I mean, as I said, you never know which way that's going to go, but it usually doesn't look positive. So I mean, just like that psychiatric evaluation, you keep on top of them. You have to, you know, make sure everything, just go. Just have that, like, in a health package, some sort of, you know, benefit package for lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let me bring this point up, guys. I witnessed this at a Hall of Fame dinner in Delaware County here. When you decide on you're going to give so much, it comes out of your purse. I was surprised. The fighters would have to okay. The managers would. Everybody would get less money. Everybody has to agree. Boss Pritchard, who played with the Eagles in the late 40s, received $3,800 a year for a salary. He played both ways. He got $116 a month in retirement. Well, it was peanuts. So the owners said, look, we got to do something. These guys were the front runners of the league. They formed. They made nothing. Let's give them some money. And you know what the players' union said? No. And this was headed by Gene Upshaw. No, where the hell with those old guys? You know, they didn't blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
So the owners, this was Pritchard speaking from the heart. The owners said, we will give them the money ourselves and not dip into your union fund. And they said, we don't even want that. And he got up and everybody booed, you know, the NFL. And he said, Gene Upshaw was the main guy against it. I was shocked. He said, we would have got maybe $200 a month more. It would have gone a long way. He said, we all had to do winter jobs. He said, but I just want you to know what you're dealing with. You know, the players didn't have to give up a dime and still wouldn't allow it. They were afraid that it was going to, you know, they were going to dip in later on or do something. They didn't even want to okay a dime. I mean, I was really disappointed in the players' union when they did that. But I'm thinking if the fighters have to give in, not only are the promoters not going to want to give money, the fighters and their managers aren't going to want to give money. Like, because you said, there's a short window, and they don't want anything taken out of their purse because, they like you say, their careers are so short. But I think it should be the promoters that contribute the most and have most of the say. And I think the pressure politically should be put on the promoters. They're the ones really making, you know, they're making a lot of money. And if they want the fight game to be better and they want more fighters and putting better shows on, they're going to have to give these guys some incentive. Like you say, you know, guys that are journeyman fighters, they know they're never going to become champions. They're never going to make the big dollar. But if they had a pension fund of some type, it would they'd stay in the game a little longer and be in better shape. I mean, the baseball players' pension fund is fantastic. You only have to play in the major leagues 5 years, and you qualify for the pension. The golf pension fund is astronomical, and they started it about the time Tiger Woods came into view, and he just made so much money. There's so much money in a pension fund for golfers, and they're already the richest athletes. I mean, it's unbelievable. But the poor fighter, you know, who probably takes the worst beating of any of the athletes, gets nothing. That's a damn disgrace. But, you know, it would have to come from politics, I think, because you, you know, the, boxing has always been a sport where nobody from the outside ever had any say in it. And I don't think they want any political say in it. So I think we'll, you know, in our lifetime, I don't know if we'll ever see it. I don't know. It would be a tough group to get together and unionize. It really would be. I don't, you know. But well, poor Bros Pritchard, he shocked the audience that night. Speaking over here at the Conquerville Inn, Frank, at Delaware County Hall of Fame Dinner, we brought him as a...
Right.
He was still living, man. That's about 15 years ago. And he and Van Buren made $10,000. And he was a number one ground gainer in the NFL. His salary was $10,000. I mean, you know, that might have been a lot of money, you know, 1947. But, you know, today, what the hell would your pension be? Nothing. You wouldn't be able to... Price you go to the grocery store more than once a week, you know, it's that. So it's a shame, but I was surprised looking at how the players' union felt about it. I couldn't believe they didn't have any respect or any consideration for the old guys that played for nothing.
Well,
by the way,
you,
what do you think
remember,
of Bednarik? Wasn't that a shame?
Yeah.
Chuck Bednarik dying?
Yeah, we dedicated the show to him last year, I was just going to say, if you remember – Chuck had to work for Warner Cement to make a living because his total salary was $24,000 a year, and he made more than that selling concrete. But you know, and you're right. There is no. I've screamed, hollered, done everything I can. I've been all over the politicians about this situation where, you know, they want to complain about what happens to Medicare, but they're not looking at what's happening to the guys that got us to the show, showed a great restraint and brought a lot of good stuff to the public in sports that are now sitting on the sidelines, unable to – they have a choice, either take medicine or they eat because they just don't get enough. I mean, you know, guys of that age – are getting like under $600 a month on Social Security, and their medical bills can be up towards $1,000 a month. Hell, one round of 90 days of a blood thinner can be as high as $1,400. You know?
Yeah, you're right. But you know what? Like the owners is they're a group. They meet. They but in boxing. You don't. Could you imagine the dialogue between the 10 biggest boxing promoters in the country? What do you think would happen? How long do you think
it's
it would
like
be before a shooting war broke out?
Yeah, it's like watching The Sopranos. Yeah.
It would be like a mafia meeting. Everybody pulls a gun out and starts shooting the other one.
I don't think you'll ever get. You wouldn't be able to get their heads in the same room, Chris.
Right.
Yeah.
You
know what?
Can you imagine that
money,
crew getting
with
together?
With all the money that's in boxing, I mean, obviously it's going to take politics, but you don't necessarily need to, like, boxing's so worried about being regulated. You don't necessarily need to have Congress come in and regulate boxing to establish health care for boxers. Those are two separate things. Yes, boxing does need to, you know, have some type of oversight, but even without oversight, you can go ahead and with all the money that's made in boxing, I mean, literally, if you took $5 off of every purse over $5,000, and $5 off of every gate over $5,000, and then if it's over $10,000, just another $10. Literally, I mean, that would be so much money for these retired boxers. Then you can stipulate something. If you've, you know, boxed for 10 years, you're eligible for this. If you're injured, you're eligible for this. The money is out there. All you need is someone to regulate the flow of the money and create that, you know, create the process of creating a health care program for these fighters. The money's out there. All Congress has to do is step in. You can do that. You can create this health care plan literally just – I mean, I literally just thought of that as we were talking. You can create this, have it regulated by Congress, and not have Congress step in and change the way boxing is run with the promoters and the decisions. You don't even need to create a full oversight on boxing to go ahead and establish something that could take care of these fighters long term. That literally is nothing but a bill passing before Congress. Simple as that. And someone to regulate the funds. It's ridiculous.
It is. It really is. But like I just said, can you imagine putting all those guys in one room and trying to come up with an agreement? Oh, my God.
Like you said, it has to be politicized.
Yeah, you have to bar any. You're not allowed to have any chairs or stools in the building. Somebody will wrap one around the other guy's head.
It's got to go to Congress, Dr. Chris. It's got to go to Congress.
Yeah. You got to go to Congress. Well, Dave truly believed, Dave Tiberi truly believed that Senator Roth was going to help him. And I said, Dave, take the fight. He was offered over $500,000, which is a lot of money. I said, take the fight and forget Senator Roth. Put the damn money in the bank. And I said, forget Senator Roth because he's going to do nothing for you. He's looking for the next bottle of gin that he can find.
Wow.
I mean, he was a heavy drinker. He was a renowned heavy drinker,
wow.
And he didn't do a hell of a lot for anybody except himself. I'm not ashamed to say that either, because that reputation followed him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
When Davey was 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, I trained him in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And little did I ever know that he'd fight for the title someday, you know. And he said,
right.
And his feelings were very hurt, you know, when they took that fight away from him. And he really put a lot of faith in Senator Roth. And I said, Dave, you're wasting your time. He doesn't give a damn. You got to think for yourself in this sport. And I said, take the fight, put the money away. And, you know, I said, the guy can't make 160 anymore. You got a great chance of beating him. He can't make the middleweight limit anymore. I said, take the fight. That was a lot of money 20-some years ago, $500,000. And
pretty good amount today, too, Dr. Chris, actually.
If I had it in my pocket, I'd feel a lot better.
Yeah.
$500,000's always pretty good. That's never sounded bad.
If you guys notice, the only one that hasn't said that is Z, so he must have it in the bank.
I'm over here with
Repressy's got it.
I'm over here with
Repressy's got it in the bank, Frank.
Yeah, I know he does. Yeah.
Ronnie's got it.
The guy's
got it, too.
Yeah,
A fighter like Dave Tiberi earning $500,000 today would be good, considering he was stepping up. Like, if he were on TBC to fight for the title, and literally it's supposed to be just a tune-up, stay busy fight for the champion, Dave Tiberi is only going to get paid like $50,000 to $75,000. So if $500,000 now, like right now even, they might only offer him for the rematch with him winning the title $500,000. So like back then, that's a lot of money. So, I mean, I think it says a lot about Dave, you know, to say, you know, no, I see a bigger picture here, because it's a lot of money to do something you've already done. You're already beating Tony.
All right. I feel like, Dave, you fought all your life. You've been fighting since you were 6 or 7 years old. I said, you know, cash in now and then wait and see what Roth does for you. I said, he's going to do nothing. I didn't have much faith in the guy. And as it turned out, Dave said, no, he's going to overturn this. I said, Dave, in the history of boxing, there's been one fight overturned. And then 6 months later, it was reversed. I said, there's been a million bad decisions. You're not the first one. There's been a million of them. And not one of them's ever been overturned. So forget it. It's not going to happen. No. And then Marty would call me. Marty was his manager. He said, talk to him. I said, Marty, it's not going to happen. Dave's got a lot of character, and he's got a lot of good things about his personality. And I don't, you know, he's going to put faith in the people that he believes in. And I don't have any faith in him. You don't, but he does, so you can't talk him out of it, you know. So he never made the match, and as a matter of fact, he never fought again, never fought another fight.
Yeah.
I mean, Dave has a great personality. He promotes fights. He wherever he goes, he's well-liked. He's well-liked in the state of Delaware. They all bend over backwards to help him in any endeavor he takes on. But I keep in touch with him on the phone. He's very comical, very, very funny, but... You know, he's making okay. His wife's a dental hygienist. She She makes a good salary. Dave works and does, you know, he's okay. He's comfortable. And you guys know he promotes fights now.
Sure.
Does all that. But that's not his main source of income.
No.
I feel bad how, you know, for him. But, you know, he just couldn't talk to him about it. He didn't want to hear it. You know? He said, someday you'll mention LaMotta, Graziano, and Tabiri. You're going to be mentioned in the same sentence. I said, Dave, I'd love to hear that myself. But I don't think I'm going to hear it. I'm going to be honest with you. You know? He said, yeah, LaMotta, Graziano, and Tabiri. I said, yeah, okay. All right.
Wow. When he goes, man. When Dr. Chris goes, he goes. Hey, Butch,
guys, we're up against
their
time limit here, so.
Hey, Butch, let me ask you a quick question, Butch. Real quick question. Is Aaron and Frankie next week?
You know, as far as I know, I put a call into both of them. I was telling Zeke before we went on, and I didn't get a call back from either one this week, so I would imagine they're both in the gym training.
The fight is still scheduled for
next Saturday night.
Wow. Okay. I just definitely wanted to get that out to our listeners too. Wow.
Yeah. It's at the Robarts Arena in Sarasota, Florida, on Fruitvale Road. Tickets are still available. China Smith is fighting in the first fight, and then Aaron and Frankie are the main card. So it should be a tremendous fight. There's eight fights that night.
Hey, Frank, some night you ought to get Keith back on. I want to hear what he has to say about the Guerrero fight. I'd love to hear what he has to say.
I did talk to Dan about that, and we have him scheduled for April. He's coming back on in April.
Okay. Yeah, I'd love to hear his viewpoints on. He changed his style in the first half of that fight, and that's. I mean, he just beat the hell out of Guerrero's body. Guerrero had nothing left after about the seventh or eighth round. I mean, that was an unmerciful body beating he took. And,
well, I did talk to Guerrero.
I'd like to hear what he had to say.
I did talk to Guerrero this
tough,
week,
though. That guy,
and he's going to
come
back. He's going to take a vacation with his family, but in May he's going to come on with us.
Wow,
that's huge. All right, guys.
Hey, Chris,
have a good holiday.
I hope you and your family have a good, safe holiday.
Yeah, okay. I'm going out and finish my sunbathing.
Okay.
It's beautiful up here.
Take it easy, Dr.
We're not
going to
go next
week. Bye.
Wow. Wow.
I see it.
Wow.
Okay. Only one guy.
Oh, my goodness.
They made that
hole,
they threw it away.
Wow.
Well, guys,
the fact that he said, I'm not ashamed, Dr. Chris, you're never ashamed. That's the problem. You're never ashamed. So we don't even associate that word with you.
Yeah. Great guy. He's been spot on since the day I met him. And he's just a upfront, honest, fun guy to be with. Hell of a golfer and a good friend. So to many, many people, I mean, I can tell you people that got a lot of teeth work done for nothing. Chris is that way. He wouldn't take money from him, and he just loved his job, but he really loved people. So, of course, one guy stuck coming was what's his name from South Philly? Oh, God. I have a brain for it here. Guy just lost Hopkins because
Bernard.
Yeah, Chris wanted to. Chris went out one day. He kept coming, and Chris kept talking to him about that space he has. So he goes out in the wood pile and gets a board and brings it in. And says, "Okay, I'm going to put this in there and fill that gap in."
Dr. Chris, wow.
Well. Ty, you want to lead us out? Oh, by the way, next week we're off for the holiday. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Hey, yeah, it's been a great show. Enjoyed talking boxing with you guys and Dr. Chris as usual. Everyone enjoy their Easter. Bob is our co-pilot.
See?
It's been another great show. Definitely want to thank Dr. Chris. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob. And if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call. Butch?
I want to thank both you guys for being on and faithful. I just got a text from Frankie. He said to tell you guys both, he wishes you both a happy Easter, and he loves being on the show with you, and he's proud that we've all stuck together over all these years. So I want to pass that on to you. I want to thank Chris for coming on. I want to thank Z and Ty for coming on. It's always a pleasure. It's like sitting around the round table at the end of every day at the end of the week, and just talking boxing. It's great. John Crane, I know you're listening. I know you're still working on the job, and we wish you and your family, everybody out there, we wish you a very happy and safe holiday. Please remember, don't drink and drive. It hurts everybody. These programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see someone in uniform, a simple handshake, a nod, a smile means a world of good to everybody in uniform. We also dedicate these programs to those who lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Bager, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazwitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Henley, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland, Florida PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township, PA, Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Jermaine, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Tarpon Springs Officer Charlie Condon, and our newest entry, Patrolman Robert Wilson, Philadelphia Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields, and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hands. Happy holidays, everyone.
Shem alekma yilama, shem ahezah yilma, sun ashen evorat fet, hakuig gen mayilma. at length of day.
All units be advised, 1999 has entered his last call. May God rest his soul.